Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Third hour. What's happening? Tink and Tierney coming from our Rocket Mortgage studio. With every score change during Super Bowl 55, somebody wins $50,000 in the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl sweepstakes. See rules. Enter for free. RocketMortgageSquares.com. All right, Teek and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Teek, this will be great. It's incredibly timely with everything that's going down with the Hall of Fame. If you missed our first segment, you're going to want to catch it. We did a deep dive on just how unfair and out of whack the entire Hall of Fame voting is. And our next guest, for different reasons, had to deal with some of the inconsistencies in the voting process. Waited 14 years before he finally got his name called. 3,700 strikeouts. Generally thought to have the best curveball of all time, certainly in modern day. His hook was nasty. And up until last year, was doing games in the booth, and I heard him really my whole life as a Yankee fan doing stuff with the Twins. I always enjoyed it. And we've had him on, but it's been a long time. That is Hall of Famer Bert Blyleven. Bert, how are you feeling today, buddy? Welcome to the show.
Very good, guys. Thank you for having me on.
No,
you know what? It took me 14 years because they finally added my Little League wins.
Right. I like the humility. You finished up with 287. You know, the benchmark is 3, but all the other numbers were there, and a couple of World Series as well. People might not know that, but 2 World Series for Bert Blyleven. So, Bert, let me first start with Curt Schilling. As a pitcher, and as somebody who's been in the postseason and knows what it takes and what it entails, and having watched, you know, what he did 11-2 with a minuscule ERA against teams that were loaded up on PEDs, great teams, dynasties, and for him to continuously get shut out for what are obviously reasons that are outside of baseball, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, it's the writers' right over the first now 10 years to induct somebody into the Hall of Fame or not. It took, like you mentioned, it took 14 years for me. My numbers didn't change. Curt Schilling on the field, you were talking about postseason, 19 starts, 11-2, an ERA of 2.2. When all the cameras are on you, during the regular season, a 216-game winner, and he was a workhorse. I don't know what else they look at. He not only had shutouts, he also had saves. So this is a guy that I think deserves to be there. But, with his attitude, I think maybe off the field.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they hold that against him, but a lot of people do.
And I was going to say there, Bert, that's the inconsistency that is really unfair. And I've been to Cooperstown a couple times, and I love it. And you walk through those halls, and you see the plaques, and some of the names have incredibly checkered past. And somebody like Cap Anson, somebody like Tris Speaker, some players associated with the KKK. Kennesaw Mountain Landis was vehemently against the integration of African Americans. That's why it took as long as it did. Otherwise, it would have happened before 1947 and Jackie Robinson. What I'm saying is we grant the writers far too much power. They lean on the morality clause. But, Bert, you know that not everybody that's cast a ballot over the years is living the clean life that they project on radio or TV. And to me, that's just incredibly inconsistent.
I just watched the Ty Cobb story the other night on MLB, and You know, I mean, here, this guy was no angel, but between the lines, you know, he was one of the best ever. It's sad what happened to Pete Rose. There's a lot of guys still looking in that probably deserve to be there. But, you know, it's a tough fraternity to get into. Do you have to be squeaky clean? No, I don't believe you have to, because baseball's gone through many different eras of the steroids and prior to that other situations.
Yep.
But I think when you look at Curt Schilling, he won 20 games twice. He probably should have won the Cy Young a couple of times, led the league in innings pitched a couple of times. He was an all-star, six times in his career. He definitely has Hall of Fame numbers. So, yeah, it's sad that I know Kurt's teed off, you know, right now. And I went through that about my fourth or fifth year. My dad was passing away of Parkinson's, and I knew that my numbers spoke for themselves, but the writers kept kind of lowballing me, I felt. Mm-hmm. And I spoke up, and I said, you know, probably best they take me off the ballot. Almost the same thing that Curt Schilling did, out of frustration. I think Curt hopefully will realize he has one more year. If anything, it'll bring more attention to what he did in his career on the mound. Hopefully what he does off the field, that's his right.
Yeah.
You know, he has a right to talk his opinion.
Yeah. You know, Bert, let me take you back to when you actually did get into the Hall of Fame. And yes, it took 14 years, as you were talking about. There were frustrations, but the emotion that when it actually happened was what? Because this is something I think a lot of retired athletes, they're not that they're chasing it, but they're kind of waiting for it in anticipation, especially if they were great athletes. What was it when you finally found out?
Well, you don't go and play the game. I was born in Holland, grew up in Southern California, and you don't play the game of baseball to say, I'm going to be a Hall of Famer. That's not the way you look at it. But when your time is up, and you know your career is over, then you sit back and then you say, these are pretty good numbers, the strikeouts, the shutouts, the complete games, all that stuff. It's tough to win a major league game. You know, everything has to go your way. I also lost 250 games, you know. So what you want to do is give your team a chance to win every time you go out to that mound. And when you go walk into the ballpark, and I've had my teammates tell me, we feel good today because you're on the mound. That's all you want. You know, it'd be like no matter if you're a quarterback, you know, once Tom Brady takes the field, his offensive line is going to protect him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just, it's the way it is. And you hope that, I have never been a big fan of certain writers, and I think they all have opinions, and some of the guys never played the game. They don't know how difficult it is to win or lose a ball game or even go out there and do what Schilling did.
No, oh, it's brutal. It's the hardest game out there, in my opinion. I was talking to Bert Blylevin, Hall of Famer. And, you know, Bert, you come up. It's funny because you were in the broadcast booth for a long time, so you saw the game evolve from your perch in the booth. But you come up in 1970. And, you know, at that point, you know, middle infielder still kind of slapping it the other way, you know, good wheels, center fielder just, you know, dropped down a few bunts, not a power guy. For the most part, you had a first baseman that couldn't move with pop, maybe a third baseman that could hit a little bit in your right fielder. It's pretty much it. And then the game evolved and pretty much everybody could go oppo now at this point. If you're on the stage next year with, say, forget about Schilling, that's the pitching aspect. If you're on the stage with Bonds, will you have any animosity toward him or others, whether it's Big Poppy, A-Rod, whomever, Sosa, McGuire, we know the names, Palmeiro. If you have to share the same stage with somebody that you know took a shortcut to doing the hardest thing in pro sports, would you have an issue with that?
Yes, I would. And I still do today. Steroids were a thing of the past, I know that, but there are guys that extended their career. They added great numbers like Clemens to a career that went in Boston. He was almost out of baseball, and then he goes to Toronto and wins two Cy Youngs.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a problem with that, but it's my problem. You know, it's up to the writers again to do that. And I think if they don't make it in next year, I believe Clemens and Bonds and maybe Schilling the last year. I'm not sure where they rank, but I believe that when they get to the Veterans Committee, they won't get in either.
Wow.
I'm not talking about Schilling. I'm talking about guys that kind of the steroid type guys.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Not even the Veterans Committee.
Do you think that that's do you think that there will ever be a change in the in how the voting works, you know, given the it feels very subjective. Like the there are facts and then there are opinions, and I think a lot of this because of the morality clause we talked about a lot. Earlier in the show, it puts it into the subjective range as opposed to the objective range. Do you think there will be or should be a change to how the voting is?
No, because it's always been this way.
But it's still. But that doesn't make it right, Bert.
No, it doesn't make it right. But writers do have a right if they have 10 years of service, I believe, as a sports writer covering the game. They've reduced the amount of sports writers now that vote. I know. During my era, when I was going through the ballot, there were some 600-plus writers that had an opportunity to vote. They were sending ballots, which I had found out, to people that, sad to say, was no longer with us, but they still sent it to their office and some interns filling out the ballot. So I think they're doing a better job of controlling it. There was 14, I guess, writers that did not turn, you know, that didn't vote for anybody.
Yep.
Again, that's their right, but do they do their homework? Or is it, I'm going to call so-and-so who also has a vote, what's he feel? Mm-hmm. You know, or do you go in there as an individual and say, this is the way I feel? Al Fiducci, I believe he did a great job on MLB going over his ballot, and it was his thought process, not somebody else's.
Yeah. I saw that piece with Verducci. It's worthwhile. I don't know if everybody will agree with the selections, but it's on Twitter. I know the network ran it last night. I'm a big Verducci fan. I think he's really smart. I know he loves the game, so I'm with you on Tom. Bert, help us a little bit here with David Ortiz, because as I said before, you know, with Teak, he came up with Minnesota, and he was a part-time player, played against righties, had 57 or 58 home runs with the Twins in 6 years. Didn't flash any sort of, you know, greatness. I mean, he was when he caught one, he'd mash it, but he wasn't anything that transcended the game. Then he goes to Boston, and for whatever reasons, you know, maybe it's the dimensions, maybe it's Manny behind him, maybe it's a little PED, maybe it's everything. He becomes Big Poppy. Big Poppy's revered. Alex Rodriguez is despised. Why the difference, Bert?
I don't know. You know, Big Poppy, when he was with the Twins, I know I broadcast the games, and the guy could hit. He just didn't get an opportunity to play a lot. I think Justin Morneau was there at the time playing first base, and I'm not sure exactly. I think he got some opportunities to be the DH, but you could see his power was to left center. I mean, he's a big man.
Yeah.
And he got to Fenway Park, and he turned his whole career around. How and why he did it, I don't know. If he did, I don't know. All I can say is that, you know, Boston fans love him because what he did for that organization, bringing the World Series, helping bring the World Series, you know, to Boston. So, again, that's up to the writers to determine whether Big Poppy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but Bert, Bert, that's what I mean, and I hear you. And we're talking to Bert Blylevin, but that's exactly what I mean, how it's not equitable enough for my satisfaction. So 400 writers, because Big Poppy was approachable and affable and put up these great numbers, he gets a pass for being connected to PEDs, which he was. That's part of his past. And Alex Rodriguez, because he was, you know, vain, phony, whatever he was then or even now, whatever, he's really treated differently. So voters will, because of the relationship with David Ortiz, they will eventually get him in, I strongly believe. They will not vote for Alex Rodriguez. And there's nobody on this planet, even you who played the game, that could tell me that Alex Rodriguez wasn't twice as good a player as David Ortiz was all around. Catching, throwing, running, and hitting. All the five tools. And I just think it's so unfair. So I keep going back to this. 400 people, Bert, they've got too much power. I hate the system, and I love the sport.
Well, you know what? I know when Alex Rodriguez came up with the Seattle Mariners, he and Ken Griffey Jr., they're a 1-2 combination, and you're going to say, oh, my goodness, these two guys. Yeah, I think maybe one of them went the other way when he signed that big contract with Texas. There were a lot of guys in that Texas organization you can look at when he was there that were accused of taking PEDs. So, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to judge somebody's decision at a time that maybe they felt they needed to get to the next level and what would it take to get there. That was available at that time to a lot of players.
Yeah. You know, Bert, before we let you go, this is there was no vote. No one's going in this year. There was no veterans committee because they meet in December. So there's no veterans put in. There was none vote elected in. Obviously, it's going to be the leftover from last year's ceremony. But, I mean, is it good for baseball not to have Hall of Famers go in each and every year?
Well, there's going to be guys going in. You know, Derek Jeter, Ted Simmons. You know,
Larry Walker.
Yeah. Okay. So voted in then. I mean, because it almost like you know what I mean? It stagnates the celebration of the game.
How difficult it is. You know, Tiki, in the NFL, they'll put 5, 6, 7 guys in a year. NBA does the same thing.
Yeah.
Baseball is the only sport that sometimes nobody goes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hockey, I'm sure I don't follow hockey that much, but I'm sure there's 3 or 4 guys that go in year after year. It's just baseball has had the history of the elite get in. What considers to be an elite? I don't know, but it's up to the writers, and then it's up to the Veterans Committee. I've been on the Veterans Committee on 3 different occasions, and, you know, my first 2 were looking at guys like Deacon White that played in the 1800s. you know, and that's hard. You know, they called him Deacon because he was a religious man and he played the game right. You know, Hank O'Day was an umpire that kind of turned the umpires from 70% of the home games were being won by the home team. They were might be getting a little cash underneath, you know. So,
interesting.
There's a lot of things that in the history of the game of baseball that you have to look at and say, you know, this is where we are now. You know, the analytic part of the game. If I'm out on the mound right now and I'm facing a left-handed hitter, and my third baseman's playing short, I better not throw him that good sinker down and away because there's nobody over there to cover that. So it's a completely different game. 9 innings are a thing of the past for a starting pitcher. Give me 5 or 6 and see you later. So I don't like the way the game has gone. I hope it gets back to the old days. You know, we used to look for bunts. The guys don't bunt anymore.
No, they don't.
Until the hitters adjust, I talked to Wade Boggs about this, you know, what he thought about the shifts that are being put on. And Wade said, until the hitters adjust, it'll continue.
Yeah. Bert, if they ever shifted on Boggsy or Gwynn or Brett or Mattingly when he was young and healthy, those guys would have hit 450. Right or wrong? They would have. Kirby Puckett. You know,
they had control of the bat.
Oh, they did. Give us 30 seconds on this because I think it's a great way to end. It's Bert Blyleven, Hall of Famer, former Twins broadcaster, one of 18 men with 3,000 whiffs in the entire history of the game. You, as I said before, as I introduced you, generally thought to have the greatest curveball in the history of baseball. So what is the age? I know what I've heard and read, but from somebody who can snap it as well as anybody, when should kids start breaking off curveballs? When should parents and coaches really allow them to do that, Bert?
Well, when I fell in love with baseball and started pitching probably when I was about 10, 11 years old, my dad, which is a big, strong Dutchman that straightened bumpers for a living in my head, heard an interview with Vin Scully and Jerry Doggett with Sandy Koufax.
Okay.
And Sandy Koufax, with the arthritic elbow and had a great curveball off that 20-inch mound, he said, if I ever had a son, I wouldn't let him throw a curveball until he was about 13 or 14 years old. And I did not throw a curveball until I was about 13 or 14, or my head would have been smaller than it is right now.
So, understood. Understood. Wow. That's great advice.
Yeah. So kids out there that have a good learn control of the fastball. Fastball is the key to your success.
Yep.
Good fastball, good movement, Greg Maddux type. Work in and out. Don't be afraid to knock somebody on their butt once in a while. Have fun out there. Enjoy the game.
Mix in a little change up too, right, Bert?
Nah.
No.
Change up off the curveball. Come on.
Okay. All right. Hey, listen, I'll defer, my man. Bert, really good chatting with you. Awesome conversation. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the offseason. You got it, buddy.
And stay safe, and God bless you all.
Yep. Likewise. Back to you, Bert. There he is, Bert Blyleven, Hall of Famer. 13 sounds about right. I mean, his critique, I know you've seen it, but when you want to look at it again, look at his curveball at his absolute apex. Like it was like a wiffle ball. He couldn't. I don't know how. He's ridiculous. Like if he threw 99, you know, which he didn't.
He was
a competitor, and he played on a lot of bad teams for a while too. So he probably would have more wins than the 287 that he was good enough to ring up as it was.
79% he got in.
After 79% in 20 with Roberto. What, 2011?
2011. Yeah.
With Roberto Alomar was in that class, right?
That's right.
Robbie Alomar. All right, we'll get a little break. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed that. Burr Blylev and Tiki and Tierney rolling on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network.
Welcome back to Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. BT taking off. He's going out to St. John's to call the St. John's game this evening. DCL, tell me at some point here they're playing. Not that it matters. I can't see it, but you can listen to it. You can find it on the radio. BT and he's going to have a good time calling that game. We haven't got to do a bunch of them this season, but he left a little bit early, so I'll bring us home for the next two segments here on Tiki and Tierney. Now, we mentioned Jared Goff at the top of the this hour, and there was something interesting that Les Snead, their general manager, said. They're playing DePaul, by the way, so it's actually going to be a good game out at St. John's. That Les Snead talked about the open competition with Jared Goff this upcoming season. And on its surface, it's like, of course there should be an open competition. You know, you played poorly, and John Wofford's on the squad. Not that he's the man, but, you know, get better, work a little bit harder, feel the pressure of competition, and maybe it makes us all better. But I think there is a specific reason that they said an open competition. Now, it's not a ringing endorsement, especially to a guy who you gave 4 years and $134 million in extension money to before you had to do it, something I keep railing on because it's nonsense that you pay quarterbacks, especially quarterbacks, before you have to because of the way their structures are. They end up having these enormous cap numbers. For instance, Jared Goff, his dead cap money is $65 million. Now, that's pre-June 1 cut. You obviously are not going to cut him because even after June 1 cut, it's still $50 million. But here's the reason that you say, if you're Les Snead or you're Sean McVay, the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams, that it's going to be an open competition because that means that you haven't given up on him. That means you haven't said, he's a terrible quarterback. He doesn't fit what we're trying to do. He is damaged goods. Would you please take him from us? Because the only way to get rid of a quarterback who you've paid as much money as Jared Goff has been paid, by the way, Carson Wentz with the Philadelphia Eagles is in this exact same situation. They haven't rhetoriced it the same way in Philadelphia, but it's the exact same way. If you cut him after June 1st, it's $35 million for Carson Wentz. If you cut him before that, it's $59 million. So that's just not a – you can't do that, right? You can't make that proposition. Now, you could trade him before June 1st, but that's also a pretty big cap hit. All of these contracts have been structured, especially with the declining cap. All of these quarterback contracts have been structured so that trading them post June 1st, hear what I'm saying, trading these quarterbacks post June 1st, so after June 1st, is not punitive to the cap, at least not as punitive. So for Jared Goff, the post-June 1st trade cap hit, the dead cap number that hits your cap, that's what you're basically paying to the cap, even though he's not on your team, is $6.8 million. That's nothing. For Carson Wentz, it's pretty similar. It's $9.2 million. And so the reason that you say we are going to have an open competition with Jared Goff or Carson Wentz, whoever these prepaid quarterbacks are that are making too much money, haven't proven themselves, and are not living up to the $100 million, $35 million a year average value that's on their contracts, the way that you salvage the conversation around them is to say we're having a training camp competition. So what that does, it says we're going to give – we believe in him still, but we want him to fight for it and we want him to earn it. There's still value in him. We believe in him, but he's got to work a little bit harder. He's still a young player. Yeah, we paid him, but we want to make sure that we got it right. And so there's this competition that's going to happen in training camp. And since training camps are in late August and late July, I should say, in August, it's well past the June 1st trade deadline. And so if you really don't want him and he stinks it up when it gets to, when you get to training camp, you say, you know what? He's still a good player. But this other guy that we got, whether in Philadelphia it's Jalen Hurts or in Los Angeles it's just John Wofford, man. We found him. We made him a project, and he really grew, and he was fantastic for us. Yeah, as much as we love Jared Goff, John Wofford is just a little bit better. And he's going to be our starting quarterback. We trust him much more. Yeah, Jared's still good. How about you take him? We'll trade you to him now. We'll trade you. And we're not going to get hit with $30 million or $50 million on our cap. We're going to get hit with $7 million on our trading cap. He's still a really good quarterback, but now he becomes your problem. I thought this was actually very smart and astute of Les Snead, to position it that way. Staying non-committal, because you don't want to bury the kid, right? You don't want to make him worthless, because if he becomes worthless, where you start saying Jared Goff is just not in our plans going forward, then if you're the Atlanta Falcons or you're the Carolina Panthers, why do you want that kid? Why do you want him? You wouldn't, right? So what you have to do is say, we're going to have a competition. It's going to happen at the beginning of training camp in August, and you know we believe in him. But if he gets beat out, would you like him? Jared Goff, he went to a Super Bowl. He's got talent. He's a good leader. Sometimes he's really good. There's some missteps in there, but sometimes he's really good. How about you take him? He's better than the guy that you have. There's a reason that Les Snead decided to say that there was going to be an open quarterback competition for the LA Rams next year, and I thought it was actually the smart way. It's really the only way to handle these type of situations, but it's the exact reason that I have been saying this for 2 years now, and it frustrates the hell out of me. As a businessman, as an athlete, I love it. You know, Jared Goff, go get paid. Carson Wentz, go get paid. Anybody, go get paid. He's a billion, multi-billion dollar industry. $14 billion it was a couple of years ago. It's probably fallen, obviously. I think it's probably down to 12 or so, 12 or 11. Because of the pandemic and the lack of fans and merchandising and all that good stuff that goes with having people in the stadiums with 2020. But it's a multi-billion dollar business. Go make as much money as you can. But from a business perspective, to me, it makes no sense to pay someone before you have to. Because why? To make them feel good? He doesn't need to feel good. He needs to play good. If he plays good, then you get paid good, right? That's the cliche in football. It's why you see these guys all dapped up and with, you know, their gloves and their wristbands. You feel good, you play good. You play good, you get paid good, right? With these quarterbacks, it's you get paid good before you play good. What's the point? It doesn't make any sense to me. And so the Rams, maybe to a lesser extent, the Philadelphia Eagles. I think they hired a different head coach in Sirianni to try to salvage Carson Wentz. But it sounds like with the Rams, they're trying to make up for their mistake of paying Jared Goff too early by saying that there's going to be a competition which makes him available post June 1. And post June 1 availability means that Jared Goff isn't so expensive for the Rams if they decide to move off of from him. It's interesting. It's very rare that you see a quarterback who's already got paid and been the starter for a couple of years not get the favor of the head coach or the general managers. That'll be an interesting saga to watch this offseason. Obviously, it's just a minor story, but we had a short segment, so I thought I'd throw that in there. Again, BT's out for the rest of the show. I will take us home with the blast on the other side of the break here. Could Tua Tagovailoa, who BT's not high on, I think you need to give him a little bit of a break, and Devontae Smith, his former wide receiver, star wide receiver, recipient of the national championship winning touchdown, could they be headed for a reunion? The Blast is next, but first, let's get an update. It's time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is from Kyle in North Carolina. He queries, Teek, I just heard you talking about Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. Of those two, which one do you think is not on their team next year? It's a great question. I think that the Eagles hired a coach to save Carson Wentz and the Rams have a coach who is, I don't want to say soured, but he is souring a little bit to Jared Goff. So if I had to pick between which one of those two is not going to be on their team next year, it's easily Jared Goff. And it's probably going to be by trade, as I was just detailing. Go check that out on radio.com. Don't forget, you can submit a question by going to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or you can tweet us at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Tiki Barber here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Last few minutes of the show, we have the blast. And since BT is not here, I always enjoy these segments when I get to force Tom DeCelestino to be a vocal participant on Tiki and Tierney. DeCel, are you ready to run through the blast with me?
Tiki, you don't have to lie. You don't have to say you enjoy it.
I do. You know I do. Let's do it. Let's hit it.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, here we go. Tiki, number one. Raiders GM Mike Mayock seemed to call out tackle Trent Brown yesterday, saying, quote, "We've got to get a more consistent player," end quote. Brown made over $21 million last season and is set to make $14 this year.
Jeez.
What are our thoughts on coaches and GMs calling their players out publicly?
Dude, I love this. And I'm only informed, this is an interesting question. You wrote this one, right, DeCel?
I did.
Yeah, this is a good one, and it's good because it's pertinent to the last game of the regular season I got to call, which was the Broncos and the Raiders. And I only bring this up because John Gruden was talking specifically to us, at least, and we didn't bring it up because he didn't play, in the production meeting about Trent Brown, about what this team needed to do to be more consistent and more dominant at points. Remember, they had a really good offensive line and they had a bunch of injuries, including Richie Incognito and Trent Brown. And John Gruden's quote was amazing. He said, look, we hired Trent Brown to be the LeBron James of tackles, and he's not playing like LeBron James or playing at all. So I think this is great, especially for a guy who you paid so much money. I mean, $21 million for tackle and salary this season, and in 14 next year. It's a lot of money to be tied up for a guy who's not performing and producing. John Gruden is not going anywhere. He has a great rapport with his locker room, and Mike Mayock is an extension of his head coach. So I think this passes the smell test, so to speak, because the guys in that locker room know that they can be good, but they're not going to be good if these guys that are paid to be great aren't consistent. So I think this is right on the money.
Former Alabama teammates Tua Tagovailoa and Devontae Smith have apparently discussed teaming up again in Miami. Yesterday at the Senior Bowl, Smith said, quote, "We just talked about it. Would be nice to run it back again." So if Miami is set with Tua at quarterback, is Smith the best option for the Dolphins at number three in the draft?
He's probably not the best option. I'm not in the camp of draft a quarterback. But maybe an offensive lineman if Penei Sewell falls down to them. But if he's there, I think there's something about like making the emotional pick. Like so much of the draft and the analysis around the draft is, you know, what's going to be the value of this guy 5 years from now? Or, you know, we can't take XYZ player this high in the draft. Or, you know, it's too much money, especially if we hold on to him with the fifth-year option. We don't want to have a franchise-level tag on a wide receiver, which is about $16 or $18 million at this point, on a wide receiver by taking Devontae Smith at number three. But I think there is something to be said about something that just feels right. And we know that these two have an amazing connection. It would be exciting for, I think, the fan base to have Tua have comfortability with someone who he has, you know, already existing comfort with. And Devontae Smith is a great option. Now, Ja'Marr Chase probably goes before him. But if there is a if they view them as equal in any way, so obviously Ja'Marr Chase is bigger, Devontae Smith is probably a little bit faster, better route runner, those things. So if it comes out even and there's like we need a tiebreaker, and Tua is like, I want Devontae Smith, then go take Devontae Smith. It'll feel right as opposed to maybe being analytically correct. So yeah, that'd be interesting. I'd like to see that happen actually.
All right, T, let's move to a little NBA here. The Knicks and Clippers are said to be interested in acquiring Pistons guard and former MVP Derrick Rose. Mm. Rose is averaging 14 points for Detroit this season, which is down from 18 the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Rose also hasn't started a single game this season for the 4-win Pistons. Ouch.
Yeah.
Can Rose still be a significant contributor to a contender?
Yes. That's why I don't see him going to the Knicks. The Clippers actually make sense, because let's think about where the Clippers are. Well, they're third, I think, in the West right now. I haven't seen the updated standings in a couple of days, but I think they're third in the West. But it doesn't even matter. We know how contending they're going to be, especially once Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are consistently playing together and are healthy. But what they lost this past offseason was some of those role players, and you know, a lot of that was because of coaching turnover, with obviously Doc Rivers leaving, and the desire to get players that are more comfortable with Kawhi Leonard's leadership style. But ultimately, what you need is a ball handler and someone who, on a given night off the bench, because I don't think he starts, but he comes off the bench and gives you a 20-point night, maybe even in the postseason. That's Derrick Rose. I think on a team like the Clippers, who have two stars already, not a superstar in Paul George, but a star, two stars already, some really good depth with Beverly and Lou Williams. I think Derrick Rose can be a significant part of that, because he fills a gap or a void that sometimes you see with the Clippers last season. So yeah, I think he can be, but it's got to be the right team. It can't be a team that, you know, needs another superstar in order to be viable.
You were correct, by the way, T. The Clippers are third in the West, 13-5, but just one game back of the Lakers for the best record.
Yeah, and Kawhi didn't play, right? Both of them didn't play, I don't think.
Correct. They both did not play because of COVID-19 protocols.
That is correct.
All right, T, from one NBA MVP to another, Russell Westbrook scored 19 points on 7 of 17 shooting last night from the field in the Wizards' loss to the Rockets. Mm. The former MVP has 163 points this season on 163 shots.
That's bad ratio.
37% from the field, but is still basically averaging a triple-double. Is it time for Westbrook to take more of a role player position on the team, or can he still be a number two?
You know, I think Russell Westbrook is at the point, and when we talked to Chris Webber about this at the end of our 3 p.m. Eastern, noon, p.m. Pacific hour, you can check it out on radio.com. It was an interesting thought. And we know this, I think, intuitively. Basketball scorers need to be jump shooters in today's day and age. Yes, if you are an uber athlete, as Russell Westbrook is, I almost said was, but I'm going to say is, and I was stuck on the tense there, because I think he's getting to that point where he's slowing down physically. Like he is so like dynamic and explosive, and has been so for the entirety of his career, but he's getting a little bit older. And so when you start to feel that in your knees a little bit, and you know you're not as confident of, you know, smashing around people and being reckless with your body, if you can't jump shoot, how do you score? And he's never worked on that part of his game. He's never ever been a good three-point shooter, and we know even in the mid-range he's not really viable. So the question is, can he still be a number two? No. I think the only thing he can be is a facilitator. And that's something that we know he's good at. If he, you know, you have the right combo running pick and rolls, or you let him be aggressive and hopefully, you know, draw a defense to you. But it's almost getting to the point and this is what Chris Webber said, and he's right, where people are just saying, all right, I'm not going to run around with you. Just shoot it. Go ahead. See if you can make it. You got that one. Knock it down. And he's shooting 37%. This isn't from three-point range, which would be horrible in and of itself. This is from the field. That's pretty bad. So I'm going to say no. I don't think he can be a good number two.
All right, I think we'll finish up with a little baseball here. The Phillies and catcher JT Realmuto agreed this week on a 5-year, $115 million deal, with $10 million being deferred from the first year to help the team. Should more teams and players agree to deferring payments to avoid the luxury tax?
They should. I'm surprised, especially some of these. I mean, the Phillies aren't a small market team, but think of some of these smaller market teams who struggle about the decision to sign a high-priced free agent. And the reason you struggle is because if you get into the luxury tax, I mean, it cripples you. And there's just no way, if your team isn't good, to make up revenue. But if, say, you're a small market team, and this is not, again, this doesn't apply to the Phillies. I'm not saying the Phillies are a small market team. But the question is, should more teams do this to avoid the luxury tax? I think absolutely. And especially if players are willing to do so, because they know that that money is still guaranteed. Like, the reality is, small market teams, they need the success. Like, they have to win. They have to be in position to win a World Series. Otherwise, it's just not worth it. And ultimately, they do need to win a World Series. Otherwise, it's not worth it for them to, you know, sign these massive free agent contracts. I mean, this is 20, what is this, 20, I can't do the math, $25 million a year? It's a 23 or whatever it is. That's a lot of money for some of these small market teams. So I'm going to say, yeah, I think more teams should defer payments, even though it does get a little dicey on the books if you push them back too far.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Good show today on Tiki and Tierney. Lots of interesting talk, especially about the Hall of Fame. BT is always fired up about the Hall of Fame and whether or not it should change. And look, I think Bert Blyleven, who we had on at the beginning of this hour, he's right. It's never going to change because it's always been that way. The Hall of Fames and all of the sports are steeped in tradition. And even if that tradition has flawed backgrounds, there's a nostalgia that you just can't let go of. I think if it's going to change, it's not going to change for a couple of decades, especially in baseball, who's so stuck on that. At least in the NFL, unlike with basketball where everybody gets in, at least in the NFL, they debate it, who belongs. Hopefully my brother gets in one day. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for sticking with us. Be safe.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.